Chapter 4. Nance and the rest of the ladies could barely wait for Lexi to pull to a stop in the parking lot of the Brook Ridge Falls Retirement Center before they were pushing open the doors and jumping out. They were eager to get up to Nance's apartment and go over the clues.
Uh-oh. Ruth pointed toward the lawn in front of the building. Do you see what I see?
All of the campaign signs that Helen had put up on the lawn in front of the building had been replaced with Mario's signs.
I told you he was replacing my signs.
Helen stormed over and started pulling the signs out.
Helen, I'm so glad I caught you.
Norm Rosen hurried up the sidewalk and Helen straightened, plastering a smile on her face.
Hello, Norm. So lovely to see you. Yes, yes, indeed. I just wanted to tell you that your idea for expanding the library at the community center is a grand one. You have my vote.
Why, thank you very much, Norm.
Helen beamed at him, placing herself strategically in front of Mario's signs so as to block them.
Well, have a nice day.
Norm trotted off. Helen went back to pulling out the signs.
See that? The people want to vote for me. They can tell that Mario is a shady liar.
Hey, what are you doing? Leave those signs alone.
Mario rushed up and grabbed the sign out of Ruth's hands.
What do you think you are doing pulling out my signs?
Your signs? Mine were here first, and you pulled them out, Helen said.
And Dora, who had slithered up beside Mario, butted in.
You hogged the whole lawn. You put all your signs here and there was no room for others. It's only fair that you guys share the space.
Yeah, fair's fair.
A slim man in his mid-30s with dark, greasy hair and a scraggly beard stood beside Endora.
You better watch who you mess with.
Mario ripped the sign out of Helen's hands, almost smacking Endora in the face. Luckily, Endora had quick reflexes and she turned her face, narrowly avoiding the edge of the sign. Good thing, too, as a slice from the side of that thick poster paper would have made for a nasty paper cut. But, judging by the scars Lexi could now see on Endora's chin and cheek, it appeared as if Endora was used to avoiding things hitting her in the face. Perhaps that was from being part of the acts in the Circo Acrobata.
Fine, then. I'll take this side of the lawn.
Helen pointed to the left of the front door.
And you take the other. Won't make any difference anyway. The residents all seem to favor voting for me.
Huh.
Mario stalked over to the left of the door and planted the sign in the ground.
They won't want to vote for you after they see the types of people you consort with.
What are you talking about?
Helen frowned at Nance, Lexi, Ruth, and Ida.
My friends here are the most upstanding citizens. Well, maybe except for Ruth.
Not them. That McGuire woman. Her grandson murdered my granddaughter.
Mario's dark eyes glistened with hatred.
Yeah, don't think I didn't see you conspiring with her. I know you ladies are up to no good, and don't think you'll get away with it. That boy is a killer. And don't you think that you're going to use some of your influence with the police to get him out of it?
Mario shoved the sign into the ground with great effort, then rubbed his hands.
We'll see about that. Besides, we don't use our influence. We prove cases on clues and facts.
Helen turned to Lexi and the others.
Come on, ladies. We have work to do.
She stomped off toward the door with the others following. Ida paused to throw a dirty look in Mario's direction.
Can you believe the nerve of him?
Helen said as they traversed the hallway to Nance's apartment.
He does seem to think that Henry is guilty, Nance said.
Is that what you think? Ida asked.
Not sure yet. We have to explore all angles.
Nance rummaged in her purse for the key. It took a while because the oversized purse was full of items. She pulled out a flashlight, Kleenex, a small can of peas, and several rain bonnets,
handing them all to Ruth as she fished inside for the key. Finally, she pulled it out and unlocked the door. Nan's apartment was a spacious two-bedroom overlooking the woods. The living room, with its micro-suede sectional, was to the right of the door. The dining room, with the large mahogany table where the ladies usually sat to discuss their investigations, was to the right. The dining room was open to the kitchen beyond, and Lexi could see the white cabinets and cherry red knickknacks on the dark granite counters. "I'll get the whiteboard. We're gonna need it for this one." Nan's headed toward the spare bedroom where she kept the 6-foot-tall rolling whiteboard. "I'll put on coffee." Helen headed toward the kitchen where Ida was already picking through the fridge.
"I wish we'd brought some snacks."
Ida looked over her shoulder pointedly at Lexi. Normally, Lexi would bring a batch of pastries from her bakery, but this time she hadn't had a chance to stop there.
"There are some Oreos in the cabinet," Nan said as she pulled the board into the dining room.
Lexi and Ruth set the table with Nan's delicate flowered dessert plates, a crystal creamer, sugar, and cloth napkins with pink embroidered edges. Soon, the enticing smell of percolating coffee permeated the room, and they were seated around the table with steaming mugs full of the dark brew, all except for Ida. She had a glass of milk. Nan's put her mug on the table and stood at the whiteboard.
"This case is a little different than our usual. I don't think we've ever had a case where the suspect is incarcerated and the police are no longer investigating."
Ida grabbed an Oreo from the serving platter in the middle of the table and dipped it in her milk.
"I don't believe we have. But we're at a disadvantage because all the clues have been found and all the suspects have been interrogated. The case isn't fresh like it usually is when we come on board, and we don't know what the police know."
"I can ask Jack," Lexi offered. While Jack didn't like them investigating his cases, she had a few ways of getting information out of him without it being obvious.
"He wasn't the investigating detective, but maybe he'll know something."
Nan's turned to the whiteboard.
"All we know is that Henry claims he came home and found Rosa dead. His alibi can't be verified."
"The killer had some sort of skill that enabled them to kill her with the butter knife."
Ruth reached for an Oreo. Apparently, her low-carb restriction really was over, though Lexi wondered if she'd ever stuck to it, seeing as they'd discovered her hiding pie crust in her purse. At least now she was eating carbs out in the open.
"And most likely knew Rosa, since they brought the muffins and she had the table set for a friendly social visit," Ida added.
"It's too bad we don't really have any suspects other than someone who knew her. That's too broad."
Ruth pulled the Oreo apart and licked the creamy middle.
"I could pump Vinny for information. You know how those inmates talk to each other. Maybe Henry said something."
Nan's considered that.
"Maybe. But I don't think we can just waltz into the prison and talk to inmates. We'll save that for a last resort."
"Muriel mentioned that the Blondinis could be behind it. And I wouldn't put it past them. Did you see how mean Mario looked when he mentioned it? Sure, he pretended to be upset, but I think he was putting on an act. I'm not saying he killed his own granddaughter, but maybe it was someone in the family, and he's protecting them," Helen said. "Henry did mention that Rosa had a concern about her family."
"What about that creepy guy that was with them today? I bet he's the killer."
Ida crunched into an Oreo.
"Who was that guy, anyway?"
"One of their cousins, I believe," Nan said. "He's in the Circo act.
But we can't just go making assumptions about people because of the way they look. What motive would he have?"
When Henry said Rosa was worried about something to do with her family, he might not have been referring to her actual blood relatives. Remember how the Blondinis consider anyone in the Circo Acrobata as family? Ruth narrowed her gaze at Helen. And let's not go accusing Mario just because you are in competition with him for the president slot. He has kind eyes.
Kind eyes?
Helen looked incredulous.
They look like the black, soulless eyes of a snake to me.
It could still be Henry. I picked another Oreo off the plate and dunked. He's a doctor and would know just where to shove the knife in to hit that artery just right. The killer would have to know that because otherwise they'd risk her getting away in the struggle. I mean, with something like a butter knife, you have to be quick and accurate.
He did stand to gain money with the life insurance, Helen pointed out.
Good point, Ruth said. And he has that flimsy alibi. Plus, he seems kind of sketchy to me.
He was nervous when we questioned him, too. Did you see the way he was playing with that pawn? You mean the chess piece? Ida asked. That was a knight.
No, the knight is the horse, Helen said. The piece he had was the bishop. That's the one that goes diagonal.
No, that's the queen, Ida said.
No, Helen shook her head. The queen goes diagonal and up and down, but only one square at a time.
Ruth waved her hand.
Whatever. My point is that he was fiddling with it like he was nervous.
Nance tapped her marker on the whiteboard.
Ladies, we have work to do.
Everyone turned their attention to Nan's and she uncapped the marker. The noxious smell of whiteboard marker drifted over as she started to write on the board.
Now we need a way to verify the alibi. Maybe Lexi can find out more about that from Jack.
Nan's lifted a brow at Lexi and Lexi nodded. She'd do her best. Nan's turned back to the board.
We don't really have anything that points to one suspect. So we need to find out who brought those muffins.
How will we do that? Ruth asked.
I could only think of one way. Those muffins are rare, so we need to visit the bakeries near Henry and Rose's place. If we find one that has those muffins, we might get lucky, and they might remember who buys them.
Nance turned to Ruth.
Henry and Rosa lived in New Ipswich. Can you see if there are any bakeries in town?
Ruth whipped an iPad out of her purse, perched a pair of magenta-framed glasses on her nose, and started typing.
There's the Confection Connection over on Elm Street.
Nance wrote the bakery name and street on the board.
And Doughy Delights over on Spring Street,
Ruth scrolled down the screen,
and Sugar Daddy's on the edge of town on Granville.
She looked up at Nan's over the rims of her glasses.
That's it for New Ipswich, but there are others in the next town.
Nan's finished writing the names on the whiteboard, then turned to them.
We'll start with these and then branch out.
Ida shot out of her chair and grabbed her purse.
Great, I could use a cupcake. Let's go.
Ruth waved her back into her seat.
Wait a minute. Do you really think that someone is going to remember exactly who they sold corn muffins to? And what if they sold to more than one person?
Do bakery owners know the names of every single person that buys muffins?
Ruth glanced at Lexi.
Well, no, but we do have our regulars.
I know many of my customers, as well as their favorite pastries, Lexi said.
That's right, Nan said. We might get lucky because corn muffins with sugar crystals on top are very unusual. Seems like something someone would come back for over and over again.
We don't have many other leads right now, so we might as well follow this one.
Good thinking.
Ida shot up from her chair again.
Not so fast. Vance gestured for Ida to sit, and she did so, a look of extreme annoyance on her face. It's almost 5 o'clock, and the bakeries might be closed. Besides, we have the potluck dinner tonight, and Helen wants to be there to get more votes. I say we meet here at 10 a.m. tomorrow and start to case these bakeries then. That will give Lexi time to glean information from Jack. If she learns anything new, it might change our course of action.